Another weekend passes, and another weekend brings about 3 points for Sheffield United as they beat. You know what? I've just completely forgotten who they were even playing. They beat Stoke City. This is what happens when you're just doing, trying to do too many things at once. Another weekend passes, and another weekend brings about 3 points as Sheffield United beat Stoke City 3-1 on Saturday. It wasn't exactly a vintage performance by the Blades, but they did the job, and they still extended their gap indeed between second and third. This is the Star Blades Monday Review with me, Chris Holt, and Danny Hall and James Shield. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Welcome.
James, we'll start off with I wouldn't say it was the elephant in the room, but it certainly wasn't the most attractive performances, and I don't think it played particularly well on Saturday, albeit the scoreline suggests otherwise.
No, I think you're right. I thought they played really well up until the point, strangely, when they went 2-0 up.
Yeah.
And that is, as I know we've sort of been discussing amongst ourselves and in the Star as well, that has been a little bit of a feature of Sheffield United's play over the past few months, that when they do manage to get themselves in control of a game, that's just when they seem to just take their foot off the pedal a little bit. But do you know what? I just think it would be a little bit too critical, a little bit, you know, picking too many nits. I was trying to think of the phrase there, and so I've mangled it anyway. I've just gone with that. To sort of discuss the faults in a team that's now 11 points clear in second and 11 points clear of third place. I actually think it's a really encouraging sign that Sheffield United are not at their best. I think we've seen them play better, as you've quite rightly said, at various stages of the campaign, but that they still finish a weekend even further in front of the chasing plaque with an even stronger grip on the automatic promotion places than they did when they started it. Sheffield United will improve. They will get better as some really important players come back from injury, and yet that gap keeps getting bigger. I know Paul Heckingbottom doesn't want to be complacent. I know he doesn't want to say this, but they are in a, excuse me, ridiculously strong position right now, and it is theirs to lose.
Danny, I guess I'm probably guilty of trying to find something interesting, because it's just like, do you know, they're just win after win after win, and I suppose we have to talk about something. James is right. We are just nitpicking now. They can play superbly every single week, and at the same token, you can't complain when they win 3-1 against a fairly strong team.
And all we're doing here as well is just, I'm going to stick up for all of us in case anyone's screaming at the screen saying, stop being so pessimistic. Sorry, Danny, for jumping in, but all we're doing is exactly what Paul Heckingbottom and his coaching staff will be doing, because they will want to keep getting better. They'll keep wanting to make improvements. And as you quite rightly said, and again, as we've pointed out in the past, Alex Neil is someone who knows how to make it difficult for Sheffield United.
Yeah, you'll take that all day long, won't you? You'll take a slightly below sparkling performance and 3 points versus, you know, the opposite is always that conundrum, is it? Would you rather play well and not get the result? You'd take 3 points every day of the week, wouldn't you? And no one really cares about how the result, you know, how the performance went. All that sort of talk of how, you know, they were below par on Saturday against, as you said, Chris, a dangerous Stoke team, you know, who did have their threats. You know, I think the number nine, Brown, had gave Robinson a really tough time early on, especially. But for all, you know, how perhaps below par United were, you know, did West Brom didn't have too much to do? You know, off my head, there are a couple of...
I think a lot of any criticism probably comes down to they were a little bit disjointed going forward, I think, is probably the best... Disjointed is probably the best way of putting it. They kind of looked like they were going to go on a good attack, and then, you know, just one pass didn't quite go, or there was a little bit of snatching at things that some players who you would expect to have a little bit more composure. I mean, there was a few times where Ollie Norwood lashing the ball out of the ground into John Street for, you know, yeah. when normally he's just so calm and composed. So it was just, I think there was just some things were just unlike them on Saturday. I think that's probably, and it was just magnified a little bit.
Yeah, as James said, it's the mark of a, again, it's that old cliche, it's the mark of a good team, isn't it, when they're not quite at the best? You know, how many times have we seen that when, you know, the other way around, they've played really well and not been able to find that breakthrough or conceded, you know, silly goals and left the game or even thrown it. You know, they went 2-0 up quite comfortably. That goal in first half injury time, I think everyone kind of thought, well, you know, that's the worst time to concede, isn't it, what they always say. And then, you know, after that, second half, just didn't seem to get going, did they? They couldn't seem to kind of re-establish that grip that they had in the first half hour or so. But still, I don't think, you know, looking back on it now, the result was ever really in danger. You know, I think that third goal definitely didn't fire them. Alex Neil maybe didn't think that it was the most creative of goals, you know, kind of taking a little bit of a deflection. And then Tommy Dell crossing for Jaden Goal Machine Bogle. But yeah, I don't think anyone could really complain about, you know, definitely the result, but also the sort of margin of it as well. I think United were, despite how poor they were, you know, I think they were value for the win as well.
Yeah, so, Alex Neil, I think, would probably, if he thinks about it himself, he should have been lauding that goal, because you found a battling central midfielder on right wing crossing the ball in for your right fullback to tap in at the six yard box.
And do you know what? Listen, I'm going to say this. I think there's two really sort of important points to make here. I really like Alex Neil. I think he's a really good manager. He's, as I've said earlier, he's clearly got the knack of causing Sheffield United problems. I like his attitude to the game, because he's not somebody who, you know, wants to sit back all the time and just stifle any creativity out of a team. I think he's someone who believes the best form of sort of defence is attack. But I think what we've got to remember here is, listen, we were talking to a manager directly after a game that he felt his team could have got something out of. And let's not kid ourselves, for long periods of the second half, it did look as if they may well get themselves back on level terms. But Alex Neil, immediately after that game, is a really competitive individual. Everybody in professional sport is. He'd seen his backside. Of course he had the ump. And he's not going to sit there and laud Sheffield United. I mean, he keeps getting every opposition manager to Bramall Lane at the moment, as sort of journalists look for a line about Sheffield United's campaign, always ask the opposition manager, what do you think about Sheffield United? Can they be stopped? Are they one of the best two teams in the division? Well, the answer to that is yes, clearly, of course they are, because they're second in the table. Both United and Burnley at the moment are by far away the two best sides on form. But also, what a rival manager is going to say? They're more bothered about their own teams. They'll issue a few sort of polite platitudes. But if they've been beaten, which most of the clubs who come to Bramall Lane are at the moment, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be pleased about it. They'll have the right ump. So I think it's important to say that. And the other thing is, when you look at that Stoke City side, and again, credit to Sheffield United for this, and credit to Burnley for the fact that they're so far in front of the chasing pack. When you go through that Stoke City lineup, when you go through their squad, some really, really good players in there. Their issue is not a lack of quality or calibre within the squad. Their issue is being able to translate that into results on a consistent basis. And they've very rarely been thumped this season. So it is that sort of cliched talk about fine margins that managers like to speak about. So I think it was always going to be a tough game. Alex Neil was always going to have the right ump after it. But Sheffield United won. And that is the main thing. All it is about at this point of the campaign is exactly that, points.
Are we at that stage now? I think we probably are, aren't we? Where it's just pick up as many points as you can and move on to the next one.
I can remember a manager from these parts. He doesn't work here anymore. He's long since moved on. But once telling us that I don't look at league tables, all I look at is performances, because if performances are right, then we'll get points. I sort of get the idea that he was trying to put forward, but let's be honest, he was talking drivel. It is all about points. Because if you don't get enough, you go down. And if you get enough, you go up. And that's what Sheffield United are trying to do. I know, listen, of course, if they play well, they'll get more points than if they don't play well. But there will be times they have to dig it out. And I think it's really good. I know I can be a miserable old so-and-so at times, but I actually think it's really good that they've managed to master that art now of coming through tough periods. And as Danny said, even when Stoke City were on top in the game and causing problems, they didn't create a sort of an avalanche of clear-cut chances. They created chances, but it wasn't, you know, sort of really under the cost stuff at any stage. I think that's a really good quality for any team to have, and it makes Sheffield United really difficult to stop, because as we've said, we all know they can play better.
Danny, the one blotting the copybook's not the right phrase. The one negative, I guess, to come out was obviously seeing Elliman and Jai hobble off. He looked in a bad way, but was since found out it's maybe not quite as bad. I think there's just heart and mouths at the minute, really, because, you know, Daniel Jeppesen, for all his talent and promise, I wouldn't like to put my house on him banging in goal after goal to, you know, to keep the tally ticking over. Billy's having a bit of a dry spell, although obviously working hard as he normally does. And Ollie McBurney's injury appears to be a lot longer than we expected it to be. So seeing Njai go down in the way he did, there was definitely a bit of concern in the stands. I could feel that around the place.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember speaking to a colleague of mine sat next to me at the game. There seemed to be sort of a deathly hush on the ground. You know, when he went down, it was quite noticeable that there was no noise whatsoever. I think everyone certainly in the three home stands sort of definitely had heart in mouths. And you know, I think every time a defender has gone near Elliman for the last few months or so, I think there's always been that nagging thought in the back of your mind of thinking, you know, please get up. You know, United, they're not a one-man team. You know, I think that would be unfair to label that at them. You know, they have a lot of very key kind of parts of the jigsaw. But Elliman, you know, no one listening to this or watching this needs me to tell him how good he is and how good he's been. For all how United are not a one-man team, I think he's probably the cog that they, you know, they can't really, there is no replacement for him, is there? I'll put it bluntly, there is no one who can come in and do what he does. So it is a huge blow, you know. As you said, there isn't someone who's going to come in and do what he does, the way he does it. And yeah, it's hopefully, you know, all we can say, hopefully, you know, Paul Heckingbottom said afterwards, he wasn't sure what the issue was. With Paul, you know, in our injury updates, he's always kind of liable to cloud things a little bit, I think it's fair to say. And I've got no issue with him doing that, to be fair. You know, he is loved to kind of give opposition managers, you know, a kind of steer and an idea about how close players are to coming back. You know, you mentioned Oliver Burney there, who seems to have been a week away for about 5 or 6 weeks now. So, yeah, all accounts, Elliman, possibly not as bad as many first thought. You know, the fact that he was there at the end of the game with an ice pack on his leg suggested that, you know, it possibly is not as bad as a lot of people first feared, in that, you know, he'll miss months and months and months. Possibly, you know, we're halfway through the transfer window, aren't we? And if he misses a couple of weeks and United get through it, you know, this sort of whole game and then the cup game afterwards, you know, it might not be the worst thing actually in terms of timing if you look at the long-term picture. But obviously, you know, for United and for Elliman as well, they'll want to be back out there as soon as possible. You know, such an integral part of how this team goes about the business. And when you consider the fact that, as you said, Daniel Jeppesen is, you know, where he is in his sort of development, he said with Billy as well, and Rita Kadra going back and Oliver Burney being, you know, sidelined still, you know, it's not the most tune time for that injury anyway. Obviously, there's no good time for a player like Elliman to be out. So hopefully he recovers soon, you know. But I imagine obviously Paul will be asked for an update on Wednesday's press conference. But I suspect that the best indication, or the only indication we'll get about how serious it is an hour before kickoff on Friday when the team sheets come in. So until then, cross your hearts and cross your fingers and everything else, really.
You don't replace Illiman and Jai, do you?
There's not a player in the league that they could even bring in to say, right, we're missing him. If you had an open checkbook, a blank check, and they say, right, Illiman Jai is leaving or he's going to be out for however how long, away you go and pick a championship player that you want. There's not a single one.
And that's another, and I'm sure Paul Heckenbottom has made this point on countless occasions over the past few weeks. That's why there's absolutely no point in Sheffield United even considering cashing in on him now, because when you look at the wages, when you factor that into any sort of equation, even if they got £35 million, £40 million for Illiman Ndiaye, they wouldn't be able to replace him with a player as good as Illiman Ndiaye. No. Just simply wouldn't happen. So, you know, I think there's, if he is out, hopefully he'll play against Hull on Friday. If he is out, two things. One, Daniel Jebison has got to look at this as, this is my moment to shine. This is my breakthrough moment. And I think he has looked a lot more mature, if I can put it like that, over the past couple of weeks. He actually looks like a player now who's beginning to use those wonderful sort of physical attributes that he's got, as well as the footballing ability. And that's something that I think he had to learn to do. And we've seen he has begun to do that. The other thing as well is, if Illiman is out, I don't think Sheffield United can look at playing with the same dynamic up top. I think if you were looking at Illiman and Jai saying Daniel Jebison coming in to replace Ollie McBurney, I don't think it would be such a difficult change. But as we've said, there is no other Illiman and Jai in that team. Illiman has possibly not looked quite as good in recent weeks when Ollie McBurney's been out. Goes to show what a good partnership they were building. But there's no reason why, say, Daniel Jebison and Billy Sharp can't build a similar partnership. So he's just got to look at it and think, this is really now my time to shine, if indeed he is required to start against Hull City.
Tactically, that looks very different. That's Sheffield United team, doesn't it, with if you're playing Billy and Daniel Jebison up front in comparison to Element and either one of those two.
But they've shown that they're a durable side, aren't they? We spent the first sort of top of this podcast talking about that. They've shown they're adaptable. Listen, with all the injuries they've had this season, if we weren't talking about an intelligent and sort of tactically astute group of players here, we wouldn't be talking about Sheffield United being second in the table and 11 points clear. They know how to sort of get out of situations like this. They know how to adapt. They're more flexible, that squad, in terms of strategy and formation than perhaps sometimes we give them credit for.
Danny touched on it there, James, about Heggie's, shall we say, reluctance to tell the truth in terms of injuries and things like that. So, unless I missed it, it was a bit of a surprise that George Baldock and Andy Stevens were both out of the team on Saturday, and so the two wing backs were different. We've seen them, you know, once maybe dropped out and the rest. So I suspect, and we've touched on this, we felt that George Baldock has probably played too much football over the past little while, because he's had, you know, while Jaden Bogue has been injured, there hasn't been too much competition. And Enda Stevens has had a few niggles here and there, and he's kind of only just really coming back from that.
And George was playing through an injury as well, of course,
before the
break, wasn't he?
Do we suspect, there were two sides to what I'm getting at here. One, do we suspect that was indeed them just stepping out for a bit and having a breather? And two, what a couple of players to be able to come in. Mm.
Absolutely. In terms of the quality of the players who can come in, I mean, that is a problem that any Sheffield United manager, any Championship manager would like to have. And just remember as well, as much as we were talking about the difference in dynamic that Sheffield United might have to bring to their attack, let's not forget how pivotal that wing-back position is within Paul Heckingbottom's sort of preferred formation. So to be able to make two changes and still be good enough to beat Stoke City 3-1, I think was really encouraging. They all bring slightly different things to the table as well. And so that's why we asked Paul Heckingbottom afterwards, would you look at potentially, if when all four of them are fit, sort of mixing and matching on a game-by-game basis to try and reflect some of the strengths and weaknesses of the opposition? And he said, no, you know, that's not something I'm not going to do. I'm not going to get too clever about it. I suspect it is something that he might look at doing for certain games. And why would you not look at
doing? I mean, if you felt that... I don't know if you felt that the whole had a bit of a chink in the armory, and you know, down the left hand side, you'd potentially play Bogo, where you know, in opposition to that, if you felt that actually, do you know what, they've got a lad on the left who's really got the potential to do his damage, it might be better if we play George there. I would think that those kinds of things do come into Paul's head.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I'm sure they do. And as Danny said, he's not going to sort of give us chapter and verse on every thought that goes through his head. Although I think it's, you know, you can sort of decipher some of them. The other interesting thing about what you've just been talking about, though, Chris, is yes, I do think that both of them are injured, because otherwise, I think they would have both probably been on the bench. Certainly one of them would have been on the bench. I don't think that, you know, they're both sort of mature enough, they're both strong-minded enough to be able to accept that at times they're not going to be able to play every game. So I don't think it would have been an issue for either of them to maybe drop out of the side for a game. I think they would have understood that. What it did do, of course, is give Paul Heckingbottom an opportunity to talk about the conditions at Sheffield United's training ground. And I actually think this is something that he's been itching to do over the past couple of weeks and months.
He threw it in a few weeks ago, didn't he? And then kind of left it. It was kind of, he'd thrown a bit of a hand grenade in and then let everybody.
I think this is one of the great things that, credit to Paul on this. I know we've all been critical at times, as is our job, of some of the things that he's done, and we've praised him when he's deserved praise. But I think one of the things that Paul has been really good at, there are clearly, despite the fact that some people will try and pretend otherwise, there are clearly issues behind the scenes at the football club, and there have been for some while in terms of money and budget. And Paul Heckingbottom doesn't want to give his players excuses. He said that explicitly on countless occasions this season. But he's clearly getting really annoyed at the fact that they still don't have a training pitch in this sort of inclement weather that's coming up that he feels is fit for purpose. This should have been sorted a long, long time ago. One of the things that I'll give Paul Heckingbottom a real pat on the back for, though, is he's very, very clever, I think, and he's very skilled at making his point, but without picking an out-and-out fight with the board and with the hierarchy, because that can be disruptive. And I think it would be disruptive at this stage of the season. The whole focus has got to be on the football. But
he also does it while they're winning as well.
Which absolutely. Yeah. So the arguments sort of resonate more, don't they?
It's easy to have an argument like that when you're losing, and we've spoken about this before, and anyone will say that any footballer or any football manager will find an excuse if they can just to try and take the heat off themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he is really, you know, a career in the diplomatic corps could be beckoning when he finally decides to give up football, because he is very good at talking about some quite sort of thorny issues without sparking an outright war, if you like. But the very fact that he didn't take much prompting to talk about this, and the very fact that he volunteered the news that the injuries he said that had kept Ender Stevens and George Baldock out of that game against Stoke were both as a direct result of things that had been going on at the training ground, I thought was quite telling. I think it was probably almost quite a sort of cathartic moment for him. I think he's just been, he's been itching to have a little bit of a dig about this over the past couple of weeks. And I understand why.
Danny, we are midway through the transfer window now. Rita Kadra has gone. We spoke about it there, about, you know, Wednesday. I did this in the last podcast, and I said United when I meant Wednesday, and now I've done the same thing. Just to fill people in, I do two in a row, one Wednesday and one United. And
excuses.
That's why I've got myself mixed up again there. United aren't blessed with too many options at the minute up front. Someone suggested to me at the weekend that perhaps they need a different kind of player in the short term, in the way that they did previously in bringing in the likes of James Hansen, the likes of Gary Medine, at this kind of stage of the season, just to give them a different option and to get things over the line. Is that something that you would agree with? It was Gary Medine, actually. The person that I'd spoken to, Nick, said that they should actually just go for Medine and bring him in. But is that something that you would agree with?
To the merits of it. I mean, I had a piece last week? I can't remember when it was, asking Blades fans who, you know, realistically, they want to see come in. I think the definition of realistic was stretched quite a bit in terms of some of the names that came back. But Gary Medine was the most popular by some way, whether it is his you know, enduring popularity from the last time that he was here and helped him over the line, whether it was, you know, that he is exactly what they need, or whether it's the fact that, you know, they just played Blackpool a couple of weeks earlier and he was sort of fresh in the mind and, you know, gave, you know, United's defenders a typically difficult time. Whether Blackpool will be up for loaning him to United when they're struggling themselves, I think we can probably rule that one out, just reading between the lines. But yeah, I think that type of player could be an addition. I think, you know, a lot's spoken about Ollie McBurnie in the past about being a target man. And I just think that this season we've seen him, you know, the real, it's going to sound really corny, but I think the real Ollie McBurnie this season, when he's not played as that, you know, that big number nine to lump the ball up to and you know, try and, you know, battle with centre halves and have a bit of a, you know, a bit of a ding dong. I think when he's playing the way Ollie McBurnie wants to play football and the way Ollie McBurnie should be played, I think you've seen the best of him. So I think it'd be a shame if he was to come back and sort of typecast as that sort of, you know, striker, which I don't think he will be, in fairness. So someone to kind of compliment him and play that role instead of him, really, could be, you know, a good option. I think it's a really difficult conundrum for United because, you know, as Paul, well, I was going to say, suggested, he told us last week, he said, you know, basically, we've got such a good deal on Rita Kadra, you know, we need someone who sort of fits in with that. Now he's gone back to us, he's gone back to Brighton, obviously he's gone to Birmingham. So the conundrum really is that with the money that is available, you know, are you going to get a first team sort of championship ready, first team ready striker? Possibly not. With that, are you going to get a younger Premier League player who's a bit greener and not really battle ready almost, if that makes sense? You know, do you want that for this stage of the season? Nothing really sort of adds up. That Venn diagram of the different sort of aspects, and in the middle is a very small, you know, sort of target of what you need. You need someone who's been here before, knows the league, knows senior football. You don't want a green kid who's going to come in the middle and, you know, be a bit shell-shocked and take time to get up to speed, which we've seen, you know, James McAtee and Reader to an extent as well. You want that sort of battle-hardened championship, maybe not championship, but senior football, you know, experienced player. But then you're not going to get that for the amount of dosh that's laying around. So some kind of sacrifice is possibly going to have to be made somewhere. But one thing for sure is that they definitely need bodies because, you know, as we touched on earlier, with Illiman possibly out for hopefully, you know, days, hopefully weeks rather than months, you know, they need someone up there to, they needed someone before that you know, before he got injured. So his sort of absence, however long it is, will only sort of exacerbate that void. As I said, it's a difficult one because it's got to fit the profile of the squad. It's got to fit what Paul Heckingbottom needs. It's also got to fit what Paul Heckingbottom has available to use. So, yeah.
If we know anything about this ownership, they're certainly not going to panic and throw loads of money at them. Because
I think that word that's just been used, bodies, that's what this is going to come down to. We all know what Sheffield United ideally need. We all know if you did an identikit of the type of player that they want, you know, the qualities that Paul Heckingbottom would be talking about, with the financial situation as it is, he's not going to get the type of player that he wants because he wants somebody with a little bit of experience. If they're any good, the amount of money it's going to take them to get, you know, they're going to be at a good club that is probably either pushing for promotion or challenging or fighting for survival at the other end of a table. It's going to cost a lot of money to get them out, to persuade somebody to do business at this stage of the season. So he's not going to get what he wants. I might be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. If, and it does remain an if, he's able to bring somebody in, it's probably more than likely going to be a young lad with a little bit of a reputation coming in on loan from Premier League club, because you can make the case, as Danny said, as Sheffield United clearly did with Raider Kadra, about talking about development, talking about the experience that it's going to be worth, and why this makes sense to that, you know, player A's parent club. So I think that is the type of deal that's possibly more likely. What I would say as well is I'd have Gary Medin back tomorrow. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would have loved him to have been here all season because I think he would have played a really, really big part. He's a good player.
I've kind of over the course of the weekend, I was just having a look around. It was the James Hansen thing that kind of resonated with me a little bit, but James didn't score that many goals, but he did. He made a really big difference in that in that League One promotion over the part of, you know, in the latter stages of it, and I was just kind of having a think. Was there anybody around at the minute who's just kind of not really playing a lot of football at the minute, and it's just not really that, you know, those options aren't really there. It's not as if there's that type of player who's just kind of hanging around at a Wolves or a Nottingham Forest or somewhere like that, where you could go, you know what, you're not playing, let's go back here for 6 months.
That's why I just think that type of loan deal from a top flight club, if indeed a deal gets done, that's why I think it's more likely, because it's just an easier fit. It's financially, it's much, much easier for Sheffield United to do. I think the other reason as well, another thing that we've got to factor into this is that it's not just a case of what Paul Heckingbottom wants. It's not just a case of what Sheffield United can do. They've also got to make a case to the player and the club that they're going to be dealing with if they bring somebody in. And if you're a really experienced player who, and Danny's quite right to mention, Paul Heckingbottom has said, that's what I would like, but as I've suggested, I think that's going to be a difficult wish to fulfil in the current circumstances. Sheffield United have also potentially, over the next couple of months, got Ollie McBurney coming back, fingers crossed, and Rhian Brewster coming back as well. So that window, if everything goes according to plan, that window for somebody to play in might actually be quite short. And again, I think that's just an easier argument to pitch to a Premier League club about a young player than it is a more experienced player coming out maybe of a starting 11 or a first team squad somewhere, because they could effectively be doing in that situation is travelling half the length of the country to sit in a hotel for three quarters of the week to do exactly the same thing at a weekend then for the second half of this half of the season that they could be doing sat at home with a wife and kids. And that it doesn't seem to make much sense. if Sheffield United can do something, I do suspect it's going to be about bodies rather than fitting that profile of the type of play that Paul Hackingbottom wants. Privately, he probably concedes that.
Fair enough. Sorry, Dan, I was going to cut you off there. If you've got a last point, then go ahead.
I think the biggest indication might be at Brexton. If Will plays a minute for the senior team this season, he can't go out on loan again. If he's sort of involved in that Brexit game, I think, if I'm right, I think when his three-match ban will be up from his red card when he was at Derby. You know, if he's involved, you know, any time at that, I think that'll be a big indication as to whether, you know, Paul hopes, you know, and expects to get anyone in before the deadline. Because, you know, he might think, you know, putting words in his mouth a little bit, he might think, if I'm going to get an 18, 19-year-old kid from the Premier League, I'm going to play a senior minute. You know, am I best off just working with Will and developing him? After that first half of the season at Derby, you know, he knows the club, he knows what it's all about, he's had a taste of it, he knows his teammates, that kind of stuff. So it won't take as much time to get up to speed. I don't know, but as we talked about Daniel Jemison earlier, you know, this might be a big opportunity for Will to play a part as well. You know, if he can, you know, help United over the line, what a story that would be.
It's still a question of bodies, though, because I know this is a game. We're not playing a game of what if for a year. Yeah, Will Asula is a player that I know is really highly rated behind the scenes. Sheffield United are expecting bigger things from Will than possibly, again, people imagine. But let's just say he does come into the side. I still suspect Paul Heckenbottom will do what every manager on planet football does, and if the opportunity is there to spend some money or bring somebody in, they will do. Because if Will Asula then suddenly pulls up with a hamstring problem 2 games into his stay, they're back to square one. That's it's a question of bodies now and numbers, not necessarily attributes.
We'll leave it there. Hopefully by the end of the month, we'll be a couple of those bodies will be coming in the door at Bramall Lane. I think they do need them, to be honest, with the way the squad is at the minute. Thanks, Danny. Thanks, James, for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching. We'll be back on Thursday to preview. We'll be back Thursday to preview Friday night's match against Hull, and again next Monday to talk back over that match. Thanks once again. You can keep up with everything Sheffield United at thestar.co.uk/football. Thank you.